listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Welcome, everyone, to Tennis.com's podcast. I am Ed McGrogan talking with Steve Tigner out in Wimbledon. Wanted to catch up after the conclusion of week one. It's actually not the week one, you know, with a bow on it like we're used to seeing, because some third-round matches have been moved ahead to Monday. There will still be no play on the middle Sunday. So we wanted to catch up, Steve, talking about really, I think, some of the bigger happenings of week one and perhaps to look ahead to next week. I think we have to start with Serena, who saved, I guess, the chaos for last in this tournament. I didn't think there was really a ton of activity, you know, unusualness compared to last year until toward the end of this week. And now we've seen Serena lose three times before the quarterfinals at each slam this year. You know, to me, it kind of calls to mind a little bit of what Roger Federer went through last year. You know, how do you see this really, I think, first really extended rough patch for Serena?
Yeah, it's true. This is something new. You know, we've seen occasional losses from her, but now this is three straight. This feels like, you know, this is obviously more than a one-off. Something there is different from last year for her. She said in her press conference today that everybody plays the match of their life against me. And it is true that Cornet played well in this match. The woman who beat her at the French Open, Muguruza, played really well. And Ivanovic, who beat her at the Australian Open, also played really well. But I think the real issue is that, you know, when Serena, I think it's the same for any sort of older champion, when other players start to see you lose to lower, you know, slightly lower level players, they start to think they can do it too. You know, they can beat you too. Muguruza didn't seem particularly intimidated at the French Open. Cornet had already beaten Serena once this year. She said that gave her total confidence that she could close this match out because she'd already done it. So I think it's sort of, you know, that effect of that sort of locker room effect that once you're not quite as dominant, then, you know, that leads to more losses just because other players get more confident. I also feel like where Serena thinks or says that other players are playing out of their minds, I almost feel like now they can just play their normal games against her. They're a little less intimidated. Cornet said that today. She went out there and said, I just want to play like myself. I would just want to be myself. And for most players, that's usually not really possible against a player like Serena because you'd be too intimidated. But I feel like Muguruza and Cornet were both able to just be relaxed enough to play their games, and that's what worked the best for them.
Yeah, and I mean, it wasn't as if Serena was, was kind of not into this match by any stretch. I'm talking about emotionally, has kind of the classic fist toward the face of the opponent that pretty much only she could get away with, really, in the game. But I think a lot of that emotion ended up working against her, really. You know, she is a player who, I think, when it comes out on the court, it doesn't always come out the best way. And I think it appeared that, you know, you'd be surprised to think that she's a 17-time Grand Slam champion and she still is kind of playing points like someone who is, you know, looking for a breakthrough win, almost like she's almost never been in this position before.
This match reminded me, just along those lines, this match reminded me of the French Open men's final with Novak Djokovic. You know, Djokovic and Serena, both major champions, number ones, but also can get, or at least, you know, that they can get negative and show a lot of negative body language, and both of them did, and both of them waited until the match was almost lost before they gathered themselves, really, and at that point it was too late. So I think, you know, that's a big deal for both of them going forward is, you know, to show not as much negativity.
Anything with the serve? Because I thought that was one area where it was clear that Serena certainly didn't have that honed into her usual abilities.
Yeah, it wasn't as good. It wasn't as good during this tournament. She only had three aces, and it just didn't have that same sort of motion. I mean, it was the same motion, but not the same sort of smoothness and
Effortlessness, maybe.
power that we're used to. She didn't say anything afterwards. There was no real talk of any injury. So yeah, that's a bit of a mystery right now.
Yeah. Now, it this loss, of course, opens up the top half considerably for Sharapova. I think that's, really hers for the taking after her history and her, this year in general and just the past, this streak. I think this run that she's been on. And I'm a little more really interested in the bottom half of this draw, which, if you haven't noticed, is kind of been decimated a little bit. Although, many of the top seeds still remain. It's just players that you might not suspect as the usual suspects at the majors. And that includes a Wimbledon champion in Kvitova. Also includes, Radwanska, who has been very deep at Wimbledon in the past, and Caroline Wozniacki as well, who I think is sort of drumming up a little bit of dark horse potential based on kind of not only her play, but I think her position really when you consider everything that's going on with her. So, who do you really favor in that bottom half? Because I think that compelling cases can be made for really anybody.
Yeah, I picked Kvitova to make the final. I also picked Serena to win the tournament, so that's not a lock. I
It's
think
not
Kvitova
gospel, yeah.
played with a really a lot of determination against Venus, and I really think Kvitova considers this a really special tournament, and she's still pretty, I think it was haunted by the loss she had here last year to Flipkins in a match she could have won, in a tournament she could have won. I feel like she wants to get that back in a way. So I would favor her. You never obviously can tell with her. Radwanska is also, she's been to a final, she's been to a semi. I think she also has sort of some unfinished business here in her mind. And she's good on grass. She maybe it might even be, who knows, might even be her best surface. So those two definitely stand out. And Wozniacki has had a good grass court run. You have to feel like she's put a little of her personal life behind her in these in Eastbourne and here. She's had some good wins, and here she's had a good draw here. So we'll see what she can do. I don't see her beating Kvitova if they play each other, but
Talk about a contrast of styles between those two. I mean, that's night and day.
but it's a good run for her, and I think she could go for. I can't see her getting to the final. I think Kvitova has got to be the favorite down there.
And thinking a little bit about the women's game, really just in total this year, I think we've heard a little bit about how a nice youth movement has come through the game. And you've written a lot about Bouchard and Muguruza, the French, of course. And it's definitely, undeniable. I think there is more promising long-term potential at the moment in the WTA. But, one thing I've noticed this tournament and really over the, I'd say even, not even just the slams, but sort of the bigger events that have led up to the summer stretch here is, there is definitely something to be said for what the younger players are doing on the men's side. And I think we're seeing, Raonic kind of round into his own, despite, I'm not going to say the titles that accompany, breakthroughs, but Dimitrov, I think, is turn. He gets a match on center court. I think that was a pretty big statement in and of itself for the All-In Club to do. And then you have Nick Kyrgios, who, you might think that we're not going to see him again until the 2015 Australian Open, but it's he's really, I think, announced himself pretty amazingly well on this surface. He's going to get Nadal next in like a must-see match. So, maybe just some of your thoughts on, I guess, the young men that, even though the Big Four is still the clear roadblock and until proven otherwise, this has been a nice showing.
Yeah, it does seem like right now that Dimitrov and Raonic especially have, we had heard about them, and then we weren't sure about them. It seemed to be taking a long time to reach their potential, a long time to move up the rankings. But now, when you look back, you sort of see a steady progress, and you see them now, taking the next steps in Grand Slams. Reaching the quarters, each has reached a quarter this year. Each has looked, steadier and better at the at these slams recently. You know, Dimitrov lost early at the French, but he looks really good on grass. Ramos did well at the French, and he looks very solid right now. It does seem like well, those guys aren't breaking through yet, or really about to break through against the top four. It does seem like they're going to make it. There's going to be a future there, and Kyrgios is sort of, I mean, total wild card at the moment. 19 years old, and he seems
he is a wild card, I believe.
He's already literally a wild card, but he seems like a star in the making, and we'll definitely see that against Nadal, no matter what happens in the match.
Yeah, that is a center court special for sure. One overall issue I wanted to touch on, sort of an unfortunate trend actually at this tournament, is the issue of suspended matches, where darkness, has just been players unable to continue playing. But the issue that I've seen is that a lot of players have spoken up about really the, the randomness, I guess. Our friend Tom Prada used that term on Twitter actually about matches that there's really no rhyme or reason to when matches are getting called. You're seeing matches on outside courts that were suspended maybe 30 minutes, and you're still seeing a match being played a half hour later on a different court. And these are happening in some very, pivotal times, of course, in the match too. So since you're on site there, and I think you're hearing a lot about it, of course, seeing it, you're seeing that I'm sure it's pretty dark out there. So, what has been kind of the buzz about this? Do you think something really needs to be done about it?
Yeah, there does seem to be, it's up to the umpire's discretion, and they do different things on different courts. Today, Anna Ivanovic and Sabine Lisicki basically wanted to stop on court one, and they stopped a little after 9 o'clock. Yesterday, Burdich had played past 9:30, and today Madison Keys played past 9:30, a half an hour after Ivanovic and Lisicki stopped under the same light. So there is something random there. I mean, there needs to be discretion in the sense that every match will be at a different stage, and you don't want to the Burdich match continued because I think they wanted to, it was coming to possibly to the end of the match where Cilic could win, or coming back just to play a tiebreaker the next day, so they stayed out there. So I think one of the things people have suggested is to have a light meter on the court where something is designated as if the light goes below a certain level, the umpire can stop the match maybe at the end of the next game or the next changeover, just to give a little bit more of an overall sort of standard for when the matches should be called. They use that in cricket.
And something like that wouldn't be as intrusive as, say, a shot clock or something. It's an impartial, really, arbiter on the whole thing.
I don't think anybody would be against that. I think Wimbledon has a tendency to want to do things its own way, and it's always done it this way and has kept the discretion with the officials rather than doing anything more scientific. But I think that's a possibility. And when you see things like tonight, at the end of the Keys Shvedova match, the two of them were about to walk out to play a tiebreaker when Keys just asked the umpire, "Are we still playing?" And basically the umpire then had a second thought and said, "No, let's just stop now."
And that was after Keys was broken, was serving for a third set. Yeah,
really no. It was a very indecisive decision. So yeah, I think there's something that can be done there and probably should be done.
I know it is very, very dark where you are now. I'll let you go and enjoy your middle Sunday. I will hear, and we will be back next week with plenty on Wimbledon. And tomorrow you also have previews on still a pretty manic Monday of matches. It's not the fourth round spread that is usual, but it's still pretty good. So Steve will talk to you soon, and thank you all for listening to the Tennis.com podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.